This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on July 1st, 2010. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Next item on the agenda is discussion of audit policies and procedures. Vice Chair, I understand we have a number of late submitted documents.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chairman. I move we suspend the rules on the timely submission of documents so we may consider documents 1030A, 1030B, and 1030C.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. The three documents that we have on the agenda, one is a policy that establishes a pilot program for requesting consideration of legal questions by the Commission. We also have a directive on the processing of audit reports, as well as a directive on legal guidance to the Office of Compliance regarding the policy statement. This is something that we've talked about and been working hard back and forth to try to reach a conclusion on. I think that we are close to, I think we're at a place where we have a comfort level on how to proceed. But is there any discussion or questions about the policy documents that we have before us? No discussion. Do we have any motions? Commissioner McGann.
Chairman, I move. Can we move all three documents in one motion, Mr. Chairman?
I'd rule that in order.
Okay. I move that we adopt agenda document number 10-30-A, 10-30-B, 10-30-C. And authorize council to make any technical changes, grammar, whatnot. Sometimes those pop up, typos.
Vice Chair.
Just a friendly amendment. I believe we would need to ask the staff director's office to make technical conforming changes with respect to the directives. They would, in particular, need to be numbered appropriately in accordance with the rest of our directives.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my time at the commission, I've seen blue documents that were labeled 959 on a meeting day, 1003 on a meeting day. This is kind of a first, 2:51 p.m. on a meeting day. We've spent the last 24 hours hashing out language on these documents. The directive on processing audit reports has been something we've been talking about for a long time, largely motivated by the problem that we've had in getting four votes for things. We're deadlocking on more issues than the commission has in the past. In the past, we didn't need a special process for what we do when there aren't four votes for audit findings. It would happen once in a while, but it didn't really necessitate a special policy. But now it's becoming more common, so we needed a policy to deal with it. And we've been grappling with that for quite some time. And as a result, our audits have been backing up while we've been trying to figure out what the wording of this policy is. And then fairly late in the drafting of that process, there were other issues that were added in, issues related to the other, what we've now separated out into two separate directives, the FEC directive on legal guidance to the Office of Compliance. I think I can support it. It largely codifies processes that our staff have recommended and have already put in place. I think it's frankly unnecessary. And wasn't worth the time we spent on it, because it's an internal management issue and we can easily address those without having a big formal public adoption of a policy. To the extent it codifies some deadlines, I yield to no person in my long-standing commitment to timeliness of the agency and imposing deadlines where necessary. I think they're an important management tool. I just don't think we needed to do it through the issuance of a public directive. But I can support it because I don't have any substantive disagreement with it. The policy statement establishing a pilot program for requesting consideration of legal questions by the commission is the one we spent the most time on today. It's what caused the delay in the meeting. We were told that we could not do the others without this. I still don't know why. This was considered so critical. I think, you know, it may present a mild improvement in commission processes, although personally I would I think it would be improved if the requests were triggered by the agreement of four commissioners rather than two. I think given our track record on deadlocking, having two commissioners indicate an interest in something is not necessarily a good indicator that we'll be able to resolve the question, and it would be far more efficient at the front end to at least determine that four commissioners were at least interested in responding to the question. It may allow us to settle some issues at an earlier point in the audit process, but you know, I'm really not sure what we're opening up here or how many questions we're going to get. I'm glad that we were able to do this as a pilot program. I could not have supported it otherwise. But even so, as I said, I think it could be improved, and I don't know why it had to get done today. We needed to address the audit policies because, as I said, we've got a backlog on the audits, and we need a way of moving them through. But this, I think, was not necessary, and particularly on a day when we are codifying some policies that address timeliness. I think if we really want to address timeliness in the agency, we need to lead from the top, and we are not, we don't have a very good track record on that. Ballot deadlines are routinely ignored by commissioners. We have cases that were dismissed over a year ago, and there are still no statements of reasons explaining the commission action. So if we're worried about transparency, I think that, you know, that would be a good way to improve transparency. And most important to me, we still have, we are almost roughly 4 months out from the election, and we still do not have the FIA or the coordination rules in place. And at this point, for all intents and purposes, that coordination rule is not going to take place until the next cycle, because it is only addressing things that happen outside of a time window within proximity of the election, and very shortly we're going to be within that time window. So, you know, basically, we didn't have a coordination rule in place for this entire cycle outside of the window. I think that's appalling, and it was avoidable. There have been proposals on the table on both of these things for months, and I don't actually think this is one that we can't agree on. I don't think either one of these things are issues that we can't agree on. I think we can agree on them. I think there is a path to rules, and that is where we should be focusing our efforts. That is the issue above all that people are looking to us to provide some guidance on, and that we have spent as much time as we have spent on these minor procedural matters. You know, I'll support them, but I just think that this day was a whole big waste of time, and that we really need to refocus our priorities and do what people expect us to do. This commission is very concerned with process documents. We love to issue process documents, but I think what the public expects of us is to make substantive decisions, and we have, as I said, we don't have a good track record on that. I think we could do better. I think it's an achievable goal. I don't even think that some of this is caused by irretrievable differences that we cannot come to agreement on. I think we can. And I think we could have done it months ago. And I think we're all very tired. We've been working very hard. I was looking at these documents until about 1 in the morning last night, and we spent all day hashing over language. And in the long run, I don't think that any of these things are going to be nearly as important as getting our regulations done, which I certainly hope we're going to be able to do soon, though we have, you know, three controversial and difficult AOs on the next agenda, so I don't know if we'll get it done on the next agenda. I really think, as I said, if we want to say, you know, this is an agency that's committed to transparency and efficiency and timeliness, we need to set a better example from the top. And I'm personally embarrassed and very frustrated at what we've been spending our time on recently.
Any further discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Turning to actually what we're considering here today, I find it disappointing that some may think that this is a waste of time and that they are embarrassed, because to me what is a waste of time was what happened to the AFL-CIO, which is of course the second item on the agenda. But that's really what prompted what we're doing here today, among other things. The idea that we spent all day on this, that's certainly true, but let's give some context to this. Where to begin? Long before I joined the commission, there were a number of audits which would come before the commission which would cause the commission pause. And generally they turned on legal issues. And when I joined the commission, there were quite a few of those. We had a hearing a year and a half ago. We got comments from practitioners and others concerned, and some of the comments suggested that it might be helpful to have an ability to, when dealing with legal issues with the reports analysis division or the audit division, since they are not lawyers and they are those divisions are designed to do other things, a way to have issues, legal issues decided by the commission before the process continues on a flawed path. That of course was a year and a half ago, and until today no such procedure has been introduced. There have been a number of audits since I've joined the commission, and I really am not sure I'm on the same commission, because we talk about deadlocks in audits, but there's been a number of audits, and there have been some 3-3 votes on certain audits, but there has been audit after audit after audit after audit. We're not three, but four, five, and sometimes even six commissioners have rejected the findings of the audit division. Not because the auditors are bad auditors, not because they're not professional, not because they don't know how to do an audit, not because they're not experienced, but really over legal issues where they've received some guidance along the way internally, but usually it's in an area of evolving law, for example, federal election activity with state and local parties. That seems to be one theme. But certainly to say that, oh, there's been deadlocks and that's why we need these procedures, simply is not an accurate reflection of what has happened in audit. Missouri Democratic Committee had an audit. There was a situation where the auditors took the position that ads run in an off year that referenced a gubernatorial candidate were somehow federal election activity. Majority of the commission said they were not. There's been a number of other audits since, some of which I've been recused from. I was in private practice before I joined the commission, so firsthand I dealt with audit and illegal issues come up. But there have been others more recently. Friends of Meenor was a committee. Four commissioners disagreed with the audit division. We've had a number of recent oral arguments in audits where my sense is there are probably a majority of commissioners that don't necessarily agree with the position of audit. And this is not new. This has happened over the years. If you read old audits, years and years ago, really since the commission began, I went back and I actually got a copy of the Jimmy Carter for President audit, and I read it start to finish. And what is old is new, and what's new is old. And even then, the audit division would recommend legal theories that the commission would not necessarily adopt. This doesn't mean that there's deadlocks or things are bad or that kind of thing, but it means that the commission needs to step up and do something about it, and that's what we're doing here today, because then we come to more modern era with the AFL-CIO, and I'm going to not spend a lot of time on it because it's the next item on the agenda, but what is a waste of time is the fact that the way they were raising money for their political operations was questioned, as it should have been under guidelines that the commission approves, and it was questioned, but they raised a legal question, and they said as a matter of law, they were doing it correctly. This went on for years and years and years, resulting in an audit. The audit went on for quite some time. And then it finally made it to the commission, and it made it to the commission really because of an oral argument or oral presentation, whatever one wants to call it, procedure that this commission put into place, and I think has been very helpful. And it turns out that the AFL-CIO had been audited, 30 years ago on the same issue, and the commission had not only green-lighted it, but the commission seemed to have write the actual procedures for the AFL-CIO to follow. All this is water under the bridge, but my concern is that this does not happen again. And what we're doing here today, I hope, goes a long way to ensuring that does not happen again. Because the folks who work here put in much, much too much time to continue to be lampooned and beat up by those on the outside. I certainly, as one formerly on the outside, was one of the biggest proponents of blasting the staff and saying that this and that. That's what lawyers do, but now that I'm here, I've seen from the inside, and it's amazing what you learn from the inside. And it seems like audit gets blamed for things that are legal questions. RAD gets blamed for things that are audit questions. OGC gets blamed for things that are audit questions. And there's a lot of this. So I think it's important that the commission take responsibility for this, because ultimately we're the ones that bear the ultimate responsibility for everything that goes on here while we are on the commission. I certainly agree with Commissioner Weintraub that to the extent that someone thinks we're not doing things fast enough, that's the commission's fault. And the commission needs to do that, and the commissioners need to work through things. But let's not paint with too broad a brush, because as we all know, the way the commission is constituted, we rely heavily on staff recommendations and the way the vote procedures work. Notwithstanding the statute saying it takes 4 votes for the commission to do anything, over the years it has really evolved that unless you have 4 votes to stop the staff, they really don't stop, because the commission's already approved the action and it just could take on a life of its own, which becomes unfortunate because then long-term and very professional auditors get blamed for things that really are not auditors' fault. It's really a question of what the law is. And that's what we're here to do today, is to allow people to talk via paper in certain limited instances to the commission. This is not designed to allow folks to create what I've called sort of a habeas corpus jailhouse lawyer practice, where they challenge everything the reports analysis division does or what audit does. It's supposed to be limited to legal issues that are novel, complex, the sort of things that the commission needs to decide, and that's really all this does. This doesn't allow for folks to file all sorts of things, and in fact, we are trying to do as least violence to the current staff practices as we can, meaning to the extent you can work out things informally with the respective staff here at the commission, you can continue to do that. We encourage you to do that. Those who do that seem to fare much better. But there are times where the commission need to decide questions, and that's what this is designed to do. And procedure is important because it controls so much of the substance, and the way issues are framed before the commission matter. And the AFL-CIO audit illustrates this in droves. If you look at the public record on the AFL-CIO file, you will see letter after letter from their counsel, very long, very legalistic letters addressed to the reports analysis division. Most of these folks are young folks, in their 20s and their 30s, and they follow a large binder that the commission gives them as when they review the reports. They're not the sort of folks that can engage with sophisticated counsel making rather sophisticated legal arguments. That's something the commission needs to do, and that's what I hope this is going to do today. It's certainly the intent. In case someday someone listens back to the tape and they wonder what something means, hopefully they can listen to this, what I said, and take at least what I think it means. It's not designed to open up all sorts of new avenues to challenge what the staff's doing, but it is designed to address a very specific concern that has been raised time and time and time and time again. And hopefully this at least allows for some folks who feel that they have a legal issue that the commission needs to hear. And that goes for whether you're in an audit or whether you're in the reports analysis division, because they send a number of letters questioning reports, as they should. The law is quite clear with most disclosure issues, but occasionally there are issues that come up. sometimes things spill into the newspaper. Recently, there was an incident with a political group where they questioned a letter regarding how they were supposed to report certain spending, and it's not an easy issue. That's all I will say. But there is no process in place for them to take that issue to the commission. Now there will be, assuming it fits into what we're doing here today. So I don't want to drag this on too much, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's important to give some context to this. And realize that this is something that really should have been done years ago, but has not. At least a year and a half ago, this commission was told by a number of folks that this would be a good idea. It took the unfortunate test case, I guess, of the AFL-CIO to bring it to a head. And let's not forget, sometimes you look at the AFL-CIO and related groups, and you think it's a faceless group that has unlimited resources. They do not. The AFL-CIO are actually people. You know, it's a labor union, obviously, but it's not just a labor union. It's a federation of a number of unions, both domestic and international. And at the end of the day, they are teachers. And well, not teachers. Other union members are teachers, police officers, firemen, and that sort of thing. We got to remember that we actually are not just doing this in some academic theory, that real people are involved here. And when real people want to bring something to the commission, they ought to be able to bring it to the commission, and I don't think that's a waste of time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
I mean, this sort of gets into a little bit of what we're going to be talking about next, but the everyone regrets what happens. Everyone at the table, I'm sure, regrets what happened in the AFL audit. But the problem is that this procedure would not have changed that result at all. The problem in the AFL audit was that we lost track of a document. It wasn't a legal. The legal arguments were presented. We actually had an opportunity to review them at the interim audit phase, and people were not persuaded by the legal arguments until, thank goodness, the AFL, at the very end of the process, they didn't even know this document existed, found the 1979 audit. Everyone agrees. We should have found the 1979 audit at the get-go, but it was 30 years old. It was down on microfiche, and we didn't. And I think we have instituted other procedures, actually, to make sure that we look at old the history of the case. And that actually is, I believe, addressed in one of the other documents in the FEC Directive on Processing Audit Reports, which actually was pretty much done this morning. But and that's good. You know, obviously we should look for the earlier precedents, but that was a factual problem. We didn't have the facts. We didn't have in front of us the 1979 audit. In fact, the AFL didn't have the 1979 audit. They knew they'd been doing things a certain way forever, but they didn't actually realize that they had been doing it on our direction. And remarkably hadn't changed that process over the course of 30 years. It's unfortunate that we lost track of a 30-year-old document, and that nobody remembered 30 years ago what happened, but it was 30 years ago. I can't remember it ever happening before, that we lost track of something like that, and I know nobody wants to see it happen again. But that was the clincher. It was finding the document that made it all clear and persuaded everybody that that had to be the result. Without that document, the legal arguments, you know, and having a process for the legal questions to be presented really weren't going to do any good. So, you know, I recognize that it was in some sense prompted by the frustration with that case, but in fact this document doesn't address the problem, wouldn't have helped. You know, it's a small good thing. I'm going to support it. I just think it's not, shouldn't be our top priority right now.
Commissioner McGann.
I must be mistaken, because all the letters that the AFL sent into the Reports Analysis Division, I take from your comments that they were considered and rejected by the commission. So the commission knew about this and actually rejected the legal arguments at that stage. Is that what you're saying?
We had the opportunity to review those documents throughout, yeah. Those documents are certainly available.
Oh, okay. So just so the blood is on the hands of the commissioners on that one. That's interesting to know, because that's not the impression I got from reading the public file or the private file. On the contrary, There, I can find nothing in the commission procedures which would have brought that to the commission, and nothing in the commission folklore, anecdotal, formal record that says it ever went to the commission, but you're telling me the commission did reject it. That's good to know. At least we know who's accountable for this. I'd be curious to see the vote on that. I'd be like, maybe you can send me the certified vote on how that went. Turning to the audit document, in addition to the legal issues, we're also putting forward hopefully a coherent statement on audit reports and how audits work. There was a vote of the commission in 2006-ish that was done in executive session regarding whose document the audit report really is. And this is a long-standing issue with the commission, and the commission voted, at least what the vote says, is that it reflects the views of the commission. That seemed rather obvious, but to make that public took some work, and now this other item, these other items on the agenda are designed to help flesh out what that means. The auditors are going to have the full opportunity to present their position. I think it's important. Originally, I wasn't so sure about this. I thought maybe it wasn't so important, but some of my colleagues, particularly Commissioner Walther, persuaded me that the public really ought to know the procedural posture, so to speak, of the audit. So we're going to know what the auditors recommended. We're going to see how the commission voted. One thing the commission's done over the past several years, which I really had escaped me until recently, was the audit reports themselves really don't note the vote of the commission. But if you go back to the older audit reports in the 90s, the Bob Dole audit, for example, which I have here, the Quayle audit, I have a whole file here of audits, they actually, in great detail, go through what happened. The auditors recommended this, it passed the commission 6-0, or the auditors recommended that, this failed by a vote of 3-3, second motion, and it actually breaks down so people get a sense of what was really adopted and what really wasn't adopted. And I think that's very helpful, and I think the format that we're setting forth here today, I think, is going to provide more information to the public, not less, about what's going on, so that folks see whether or not, for example, there have been more deadlocks on audits or not. But looking at the audit reports currently, it's impossible to tell. Now we'll be able to see what exactly who's voting for what, which I think is very important. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have, unless there's further discussion on my motion.
Any further discussion? Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to, since I have to leave early, I'm going to make it, I'll make it short anyway. But I do want to support this enthusiastically. I think it's a part of a chain of effort, of results of an effort that have happened in the last, I'd say, 18 months to try to open the agency up, to make it more transparent to people on the outside, to give us the opportunity to at least hear and hopefully listen to what people have to say to us about the issues before them. When I first got here, I was told that people on the outside say that the penalty is really the process here. They do that for a reason. Unless people think they're being heard and heard in a timely manner and had their matters considered fairly, then it doesn't really make any difference when we get to it, and if the people outside don't think we're being fair, and we're not considering their situation. So over the years, the last several months, we've provided hearings before for audits, for hearing for advisory opinions, for pre-probable cause. We've spent a great deal of time issuing a guidebook so that the people on the outside can understand how this Byzantine operation really works in terms of the way it affects them. Previously, if you do the regs, you have no idea what happens in here. So I think all of this makes us for a better agency. It makes us more responsible. This is another step. In this particular case, what it does is leave somebody who might languish before audit or RAD for a long period of time with the uncertainty as to how it's going to go in terms of where the legal direction will be. So in theory, it could happen that someone finds themselves engaged in expensive work. RAD and audit may not know exactly how the commission is going to land on something, so they may they do their best, but they're we're certainly not a predictable operation. What it does is it gives somebody the operation to reach us at an early stage. We can listen to the issue, try to give guidance, hopefully as good as it would be at the very end, and shortcut what otherwise could be a very difficult process for everybody, including our staff. I think it's a good thing. I heard Commissioner Weintraub and I understood the concern over what will this do. Will this have a floodgate of people who will now be asking us in the interim, early interim stages for legal advice to come clear to the commission prematurely? But I think, especially in terms of the audits, which is where I see the issue mostly coming, I was reminded by Commissioner McGann, and I was very concerned about this issue earlier on, still am, about the number of audits that we do. But in fact, we only do 20 or 30 audits a year at the most. 20 or 30 audits a year, I'll say that again. Doesn't that surprise everybody? What kind of a real deterrent can this agency have in terms of audit if that's all we do? And that's all we do. And I think we should take a good hard look at how we expand our resources to deal with that. So we are a true deterrent agency. Oftentimes, we increase our thresholds so that more or less audits come to us, and we still don't have the resources to actually audit those that qualify for an audit. So, taking that into consideration, I really don't see how many questions could come to us that would really clog up our operation, flawed as some people think it is. And then secondly, it has a provision in there where the legal question has to be somewhat limited. It can't be just any legal question, but it has to be a significant moment. And I think that's where the commission should really come into play here. It's not a run-of-the-mill issue, but something that's very important that may be novel for which there's no true good guidance here in the agency or from the outside. And last, which we have, is a situation in which we deal with a deadlock. If we can't agree within 90 days, audit continues to do what it would do. And RAD, same way. They will continue in their process knowing that the agency still has not given formal advice, but they can at least proceed with their own charge. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this works as a pilot process. We might tinker with it as we go along, but I think it's a good step.
Any further discussion? If not, motion's on the table. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes 6-0.